Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry presents Information, please. Send your questions. We set up a quartet of expert marksmen to shoot them down as fast as you can throw them. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions with the correct answers. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and could be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please is a catch-as-catch-can-and-go-as-you-please program. The questions you are about to hear have not been seen or heard previously by any of the board. Now, today's panel of four consists of John Kieran, sports authority, linguist, naturalist, and general fount of information, Franklin C. Adams, conductor of the Conning Tower in the New York Post, famous to millions as FTA, Bernard Jaffe, author of Crucibles, Outposts of Science, and other books, and as our very special guest of honor, who happens to be the youngest expert we've ever had on Information Please, we have the National Women's Singles Champion. Now,
and doubles and mixed doubles.
Is that right?
Thank you very much.
Doubles and mixed doubles. And she's also won fame in several other fields. I'm referring, of course, to the charming and versatile Alice Marble. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Canada Dry rings up $10. And that's paid out to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question. Now, if you're ready, Miss Marble and gentlemen, we're off. The first question has been thought up by Mr. M. Davidson of Philadelphia, and it's a kind of a plot. I'm going to ask the entire listening audience and the studio audience, if they'll be so good, to join in with me and follow my instructions carefully. First, all of the males who are listening are asked to close their eyes. Asked to close their eyes. Nothing's going to happen. Close your eyes. With two exceptions. Any who are listening in dinner jackets need not close their eyes, and if they're in their underwear, they need not close their eyes. All others must close their eyes, including the male members of the board. Mr. Jaffe, close your eyes. Mr. Kieran, got your eyes closed. Mr. Adams, close your eyes. Your eyes, Adams. That's right. Miss Marble, keep your eyes open. And I'm going to ask you to keep your eyes closed until the following question has been answered. Mr. Jaffe, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, kindly tell me the color or colors of your tie. I'm going to ask Miss Marble to be the judge, please. An expert on color. All right, Mr. Jaffe first.
Mine is sort of a golden orange.
Will that be right, Miss Marble? Golden orange. Very good. Mr. Kieran.
Mine is blue with a white pattern. Got it.
How about that, Miss Marble?
That's quite good. Only it's in diamonds.
Well, that's good enough for us. And Mr. Adams.
Mine is canary.
Very good.
That's correct. Three dudes. They do know. I wonder how many of you listening in found that you knew the color of your own tie. All right, open up your eyes, gentlemen. This is all over. The next question from Kay Sloan of New Orleans, Louisiana. Question about tennis. For what particular stroke or technique is each of the following tennis stars famed? The first is George Love. What particular stroke? Miss Marble.
The lob.
The lob. What is a lob, Miss Marble, for the benefit
of... Lob is a ball that's hit high over the net, usually one that is a defensive shot.
I'm
to
sure
give you time to get back in position.
Very good. And Vincent Richards would be famous for what particular time?
The volley.
The volley,
and
yes.
The half volley.
Yes. Wallace Johnson, Miss Marble. Wallace Johnson.
The chop.
The chop. And finally, Billy Johnson. Miss
Forehand drive.
Forehand drive. What's unusual about the fact that Mr. Johnson had such a remarkable forehand drive?
Well, from my point of view, because I learned my forehand from him originally.
Did you really?
Yes, I mean, he was my ideal as a young player.
Would you say that...
I should say because he had a very western shot, what we call a western grip.
Well, for a man with so terrific a drive, wasn't he built rather
slightly? And he was a very small man, but weighed about 115 pounds.
Well, how'd he get such power into the forehand, Small?
I should say through timing and rhythm.
Through timing. And what's your own favorite shot, Small?
service.
First. All right. Now we've got everything covered. The next question...
I may say, Miss Marble has no weakness on the court.
Testimonial from Miss Adams. Dorothy E. Stug of San Diego, California, sends in a question about fat people in literature. Fat people in literature. I'd ask you to name them if I characterize them briefly for you. Now, what very fat person was vamped by one of the cleverest vamps in literature? What very fat person was vamped by a very clever vamp? Mr. Kieran.
Becky Sharp.
She wasn't a fat person. Though.
No, she vamped...
Lady first, of course.
She vamped one of the royal fat men of England.
I don't think that's quite correct. No, Mr. Adams?
Uncle Joe.
Beg pardon?
Uncle Joe.
Yeah, what's his full name?
Well, he was Sedley.
Yes, Sedley. Almost right. Uncle Joe to you. Joseph Sedley in Vanity Fair.
I still think his name was J-O-S, not J-O-E.
I didn't say it was J-O-E. I know it's J-O-S, but you can spell it out, make it J-O-S-E-P-H, and be a little more formal on an evening program like this. What fat lady was faithful to a poet whom all others had deserted? That's a tough one. Very tough. I think this is the first Gilbert and Sullivan question, Mr. Adams, that I have heard you mock.
Tell it again.
Who was faithful to a poet whom all others deserted? I'm not going to allow it to be correct if you get it now.
All right. Lady Jane.
Lady Jane. What play?
Patience. In or Bronthorne's Bride.
That's right. I don't know whether I should allow this or not, Mr. Adams. Do you want to argue it with me?
No. No. Give him the nickel.
Not yet. Don't reduce us that way. $10, it may be. You have to get 3 out of 4. You have to get the next 2 correct. Now, which fat old man was an intimate friend of the young Prince of Wales? A mysterious.
Sir John Falstaff, knight.
Sir John Falstaff. Fat Falstaff, we call him among us, Mr. Kieran. And who was the famous Prince of Wales?
Prince Hal. Prince Hal.
And you'll find...
Henry the Fifth.
By whom?
It's in Henry the Fifth. That is, Falstaff is in Henry the Fourth, part 1 and 2. And it's by William Shakespeare. Stratford.
On Avon. Date.
Mm-hmm. Are you referring to the bard?
The bard, all right. Now, what that person... Well... Her buttons popped off every time she took a deep breath. Who was that? Her buttons popped off every time she took a deep breath. Gotta get this quite right, gentlemen, otherwise Miss Hugh gets $10.
But it's pretty indefinite.
That's all the hint I'm going to give you, Mr. Adams, except to say that this is not in Gilbert and Sullivan.
Did you say that was a lady?
Yes. I don't... are you trying to trip me up? Her buttons popped off every time she took a deep breath. It was Peggotty and David Copperfield. Peggotty and David Copperfield. Two wrong, $10 going out to Miss Hugh. The next question, coming to us from Baltimore and from the brain of D. Lippman, question involving your knowledge of very elementary chemistry. What product can be made by using the following ingredients by the use of the proper process? Suppose you put sand, limestone, and washing soda together in the proper way, what would you get? Mr. Jaffer?
Get glass.
Get glass. You'd hardly think it would. Fascinating subject, yeah, yours.
All right.
And now, suppose, Mr. Jaffe, we continue with you, perhaps.
Right.
Suppose you put coal and castor oil in conjunction.
You get a lubricant.
Yes. I beg pardon?
You get a lubricant.
Not according to the information that I have. If you want to quarrel with me, make it short and sharp and quick. You'd get, according to my information, a silk-like textile that claims to be superior to any of the older silk substitutes. Have you ever heard of that, Mr. Jaffe?
Rayon.
Sounds as if I were wrong. I don't think it is rayon.
Well, I don't know.
Like it,
don't ask me things like that.
Now, gentlemen, I think you all can come in on this. Suppose you, and Miss Marble, suppose you mix together olive oil, vinegar, and the yolk of an egg. What would you get, Miss Marble?
Salad dressing.
Salad dressing. Quite right. Well, that's right. The stuff you use to spoil these sandwiches with. So you've got 2 out of 3 on that. $10 going out to Mr. Lippman of Baltimore, Maryland, courtesy of Canada Dry. Now, the next one, from Adele Englander of Brooklyn, New York, has to do with your knowledge of popular songs. And I'm going to give you some descriptions which have been taken from popular songs, and I'm going to ask you to name the men that these descriptions apply to. The first is, his form and face, his manly grace, are not the kind that you would find in a statue, Miss Marvel.
Bill, or my Bill, as you sometimes
say. Very good, Miss Marvel. That's right. Can you give a couple of more lines that will help us to identify my Bill?
Yes. Your Bill. Along came Bill, an ordinary boy. You'd meet him on the street and never notice him.
That's about right. She's pretty good at this, Adam, don't you think?
One of my favorites.
See what you can do on the next one, then, Miss Marvel. He's a joy heaven sent. That's all right, Miss Marvel.
Mr. Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones.
You listen to the radio, Miss Marvel.
No, I sing occasionally.
Oh, yes, the secret's out. She sings occasionally. That's right, right. It's a big holiday everywhere for the Jones family. That's a brand new air. He's a joy heaven sent. And we proudly present Mr. Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones. Now, third and last, he's not much for looks and no hero out of books. Who would that be? This goes back a little way. Ought to get into your territory, Miss Adams, Miss Kieran. He's not much for looks and no hero out of books. The answer is my man. Remember Fanny Bryce, Miss Adams? Cost me a lot, but there's one thing that I've got. It's my man and so forth. Remember it now, Miss Marvel?
I do.
You wouldn't sing it. It's how many years before your time? Millions and millions of years before your time. All right, see what you can do with the next one. N. Simon of Newark, New Jersey, tells you to take a bird. Now, you got it? Got a bird? Got it in your mind? Now take a baby. A bird and a baby. A fish. Bird, baby, fish, and dog. Bird, baby, fish, and dog. Which one requires the most food for sustenance in proportion to its weight? Jackson?
I imagine a bird.
Why?
Uses up more energy than any of the others.
That's quite right. On account of,
flight.
Flight.
High heartbeat.
Yes, high body temperature in general.
And so on.
That's quite right. Now, the next one from William G. Hayes of Larchmont, New York. Very interesting question. What was the nationality at birth of each of the following prominent persons? There are three of them. The first is the Rajah of Sarawak. The Rajah of Sarawak, S-A-R-A-W-A-K, an Indian principality. What was his nationality at birth? I'm not asking you to reveal any family secrets, gentlemen. All I want you to tell me is the Mysterian?
I say an Englishman.
An Englishman's quite correct.
That's why I said it.
Remarkable coincidence there, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the Rajah of Sarawak is an Englishman for Charles Brooks. And I think the Brooks for two generations back have been the Rajahs of that great principality in India. Now, Count Rumford. Mr. Jaffe.
He was an American.
He was an American.
Yes.
That is more or less correct.
Well, he was born in Woburn, Massachusetts.
Yes. What date?
Before the American Revolution.
American. Wouldn't make him an American.
Well, he was a colonist. American colonist.
Well, he's a subject of Great Britain in those days. I mean, his nationality would be British,
yes.
Would it not?
That's right.
But we can think of him as an American. Who was Count Rumford, Mr. Jaffe?
Why, he was an American who was forced to leave the United States because of his Tory sympathies, and he became a great scientist.
Yes.
He did some work on the theory of heat, especially. Was also a philanthropist. And founded the Royal Institution of England.
Good enough, Mr. Jaffe. That fixes up Count Rumford for us. Now, what do we do with this one? Chief Rising Cloud of the Arapaho and Cheyenne Indian tribes. What was his nationality at birth? A look of blank stupefaction spread over the faces of my four experts.
That man is not an Indian. We know that.
That's right, Karen. That's true. That's very true.
It sounds to me, it's a politician. I mean, a man who was elected to public office.
Yeah.
Is he a small, dark man?
Oh, Mr. Karen, you're trying to extort the answer from him. Who is it, Mr. Karen?
Well, I think maybe it was a Fiorella LaGuardia.
That's absolutely right, yes. Mr. LaGuardia was adopted by these tribes on April 23rd, 1938. And he's also a chief tiger killer of the Seminoles, I'd have you know.
Of New York City?
I don't know. Is it New York City? At any rate, Mr. LaGuardia's got the Indian vote pretty well sewed up. Now, we'll have an accounting, shall we? We announce a loss to date of $30 paid out to the questioners who have been a little too tough for the experts. And Mr. Milton Cross, this is your cue.
Thank you, Mr. Patton. Exactly 3 months ago, we volunteered a bit of advice to June bridegrooms. And tonight we want to address a further word, not only to those bridegrooms of last June, but to husbands of all vintages. The advice is, give your wife a night out now and then. The maid gets a night out, so surely your wife deserves one. And before you go to the movies or the theater, take your wife to dinner. It doesn't have to be expensive, for there are plenty of places that serve fine food at low prices. There's one pretty good way of judging a place to eat. If sparkling, tender, dry water is served, it usually means the owner is a man of good taste in food and beverages. This club soda, in addition, is a fine mixer, imparting an extra fine sparkle and delicious taste, and is also an excellent table water. So when you're ordering dinner for your wife, be sure to include Canada Dry Water. She'll be glad to see that familiar label, because every housewife appreciates the quality and economy of Canada Dry beverages. So there you are, gentlemen. Plan a wife's night out with a good place to eat, good food, and Canada Dry. Take a married man's word for it. It can't miss.
Mr. Croft, your Dorothy Dix characterization was timed in exactly 73 seconds. Ought to call you down for that extra 13 seconds, Mr. Croft. Suppose you go ahead with a question which, as it happens, combines two of your specialties, Miss Marble. You sing and you play tennis, they tell me. The question, which comes to us from Mrs. Robert Mish of this city, is as follows. You're asked, Miss Marble and gentlemen, to give four song titles, each of which contains a different tennis term in its title. For example, I'll give you one. This Can't Be Love. And I'm going to tell you that you may not use the word love from now on. Any tennis term whatsoever in a title of a song. It need be, it can be an old song, a new song, Miss Marble.
Swing high, swing low.
Swing high, swing low. Very good. Do you want me to count that as two swings?
If you like, that's great.
I'll count this one. Very good. Mr. Adams.
Raggedy Axe.
Good. Very good. Raggedy Axe. All right. The accent on the racket, that's two. Can't I help you out, gentlemen, at all? Let me call you sweetheart, Miss Marble, and gentlemen. That would be one. Get it, Miss Adams?
I get it.
Pretty gloomy.
You can't give volley to right of them, volley to left of them.
You can, Mr. Chair, but I won't accept it. Has to be a song. Mr. Adams?
The volleys of 19...
How can you concentrate when that goes on?
I don't concentrate at all. He slays me completely, Miss Marble. I have to listen to that sort of thing from Mr. Adams week after week. You want me to call that right, Mr. Adams? I will.
No,
I'm afraid not. Just have a couple more. How about on the old Fall River line? Line's a term in tennis, isn't it, Mr. Adams, Miss Marble? How about there's a long, long trail of wine? Long tennis. Mr. Adams.
Limehouse Blues.
I beg your pardon?
Limehouse Blues.
What is the term?
Lime on the court.
Lime, the courts are lines made of lime.
Oh, gee, that's going pretty far afield. That's going pretty far afield.
I like that, kid.
Miss Adams, you're just being aided and abetted by the charming Miss Marble here. Let's get one more, shall we? Well, I think it's some tennis terms. I know you all play tennis.
I can't think of anything, any song that has drop shot in it, do you?
No. You confused me completely. Now I can think of nothing but a song that has drop shot in it. Try to think of one. Shall
there
I,
one
Mr. Adams?
Yes, there is one with drop.
What?
Bon Bon Buddy the Chocolate Drop.
Yes, but it has to be drop shot.
That's
Adams. Yes, it does, yes. How about After the Ball? Or You're the Tops, or Cut Yourself a Piece of Cake, or Sally in Our Alley, or A Volley Was Fired at Sunset, or It Wasn't My Fault. I have these all written down. Only got three out of four.
Just at the break of day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the same program, in case you think you've switched. Well, they only got three.
Oh, I got one more.
All right, then.
Comes
Mom.
Love.
I beg pardon?
Comes Love.
I told you couldn't use love. Shall I let her in, Sharon?
Yes,
Dorothy. All right. Four song title, thank you very much. The next question from Mrs. Louis Brush of Tonawanda, New York. Test your knowledge of etymology. Etymology. What animals gave the following words their original meaning? The first is chivalry. Mr. Adams.
The horse.
The horse, yes. We get the word chivalry from what word meaning horse?
Well, it was the same as you, cavalry. I don't know what it is.
Miss Kieran?
Well, it comes directly from caval in French.
Without a stop. It comes even more directly, I think, from the Latin.
Caballus.
Caballus, yes. Mr. Jaffe, were you going to say that?
I was going to say cheval.
Cheval's all right. French caval, Latin caballus. See, this is educational. The next one, of course, chivalry has to do with knighthood, and knights were on horses, and that's how we get the connection between chivalry and horse. Now, capri comes from what animal, Mr. Curious?
Goat.
A goat. The Latin of it, seems?
Wait a minute.
A minute is too long on this program.
Well, Capricornus is,
Well, that would have to be another compound word. Capriolus, I think, would be the general.
That's a little goat.
Something like that. Means a little goat. Roebuck, a wild goat. And caprice, of course, is jumping around, as goats do jump around. Cynic. Cynic is derived from what word, Mr. Adams?
Dog.
Dog. What language?
I don't know.
You know? Beg pardon?
Latin.
Take the other one. Take the other one. Not Latin. What's the other language?
Greek.
That's right. And, Mr. Kieran, you're going to give us the...
Yes, sir. It's from the Greek, and it's the same root is found in the word cynosure, meaning constellation around its pole.
Gee, that's pretty technical. And what is the Greek word from?
The tail of the dog. Cynosure means tail of the dog.
Well, and what is the, what's the Greek word from which cynic is derived? What is the exact word?
I can't pronounce it. You tell him.
You mean you don't know, Mr. Kieran?
K-Y-N-O-S.
K-Y-O-N, that's right. Kion, meaning dog. Cynics were people who snapped at you and were generally sour, as some dogs are supposed to be. Got 3 out of 3 on that. The next one from Mildred Grooms of Memphis, Tennessee. Asks you to tell us what famous imaginary countries were created by each of the following writers. Imaginary countries. Anthony Hope. What imaginary country? Kieran.
Zenda,
yes. The full title of the book,
The Prisoner of Zenda.
The Prisoner of Zenda. But you can't tell me what Hope's real name was, Mr. Kieran. Miss Adams can't tell.
Hawkins.
Hawkins is right. Anthony Hope Hawkins. The imaginary country created by the fertile imagination of L. Frank Baum. What country was that, Miss Adams?
Oz.
Yes. That country was recently invaded by MGM. The third one, George Barr McCutcheon. George Barr McCutcheon, Mr. Kieran?
Graustar,
yes.
Emily of Graustar.
Very good. And James Barry. Miss Adams?
From.
That is not an imaginary land, exactly.
Is it?
No. No, Miss Adams.
Town in Scotland.
It's a town in Scotland, yes. Sorry, that wouldn't be the right answer. The answer would be...
Oh, Never Neverland.
That's right, Miss Adams. Never Neverland in what place?
Peter Pan.
In Peter Pan, of course. Now, the next question from Kay Morton of Los Angeles, California, has to do with science. What does each of the following suggest? Why does each of the following suggest an investigation or discovery important to science? If I say Charles Goodyear and a stove, what would that mean to you, Jeffrey?
The vulcanization of rubber.
Yes, what happened? How did Goodyear happen to find out about
Why, there are various stories about that.
Just give us one.
Yes. He was working on rubber, trying to change rubber into something that would remain plastic, both in cold weather and in very warm weather.
And what did he do with the rubber?
And he was heating it on a stove, playing around with some sulfur, and the sulfur poured into the rubber, and then he got the vulcanized rubber accidentally.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Now, if I give you the proper name, David Bruce, and I add to that the little animal known as the fly, David Bruce and a fly, what scientific investigation or discovery does that, with those two terms, mean to you, Mr. Jaffe?
That deals with the... sleeping sickness in Africa.
Yes. Want to tell us a little more about
it? Tsetse fly.
The tsetse fly.
Carries this sleeping sickness, and he discovered that the tsetse fly was the carrier of the disease.
Yes.
And isolated the causative agent.
That's quite right. I bet you can't tell us what the parasite is called in African, Mr. Jeff.
I don't think I can.
How's your African, Mr. Kieran?
That's good.
That's a good. Well, it's called Magana. My African's marvelous. Mr. Adams, what are you going to tell us?
Why, is David Bruce in the fly any relation to Robert Bruce in the spider?
Ask Walter Winkle. Don't ask me
about that.
I don't know. Is that what mixed you up, Mr. Adams?
Yes, I think Burbank could do something with that.
If I had asked you about Robert Bruce in the spider, you would have been right there, wouldn't you?
Sure.
Next time.
That's Adam, where I time. Live.
Now, August Weissmann, and Rat Tail. What does that mean to you? Mr. Jesse.
Why,
Who was Weissmann?
He was a German scientist.
Yes?
Who did some work on heredity.
Yes? We've got to get our rat tails in, Mr. Yes. Jesse, don't
you? Well, he cut the tails of generations of rats to show that an acquired characteristic... Well, let me make it a little simpler. He showed that if you inherit a certain factor, you can't destroy it by simply... removing it from generation after generation. It's in the germ plasm.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's where it stays.
He disproved the hypothesis of the inheritance of acquired characteristics.
That's right.
Inheritance of acquired characteristics.
That's right.
By the way, what is the, will you give us a 20-second summary, Mr. Jaffe, of the present status of the heredity versus environment situation?
Why, the present status is about 50-50. There's much to be said on the environmentalist point of view, that is, that the environment plays a part, and there's much to be said also on the geneticist, that is, that heredity plays an important part.
You ought to run for president. That's as cautious a statement as I have ever heard, Mr. Jaffe.
That's about all we know about it.
Perfectly correct. I'm sure that's quite correct. Well, we got 3 out of 3 on that. Maybe we can start on this next question from S. Hunt of Atlanta, Georgia. What tennis stars were related in the following way? Father, mother, and daughter. What tennis stars would they be? Mr. Marvel.
Tom, May, and Dorothy Bundy.
That's quite right. A man and wife. Man and wife. Miss Marvel again.
Johnny and Nick Van Ryan.
Very good. And mother and son? Mother and son? That's perhaps a tough one. Miss Kieran?
Johnny Doig and his mother.
Johnny Doig, Mrs. Doig, one of the Sutton sisters, and John Doig. That's quite correct. All right, we got 3 out of 3 on that one. A final checkup reveals that Canada Dry has lost a total of $30. And Mr. Cross wants a word with you, and then I'll be back with the lineup for next week.
I know everyone looks forward to giving the children a party. Certainly, it's a lot of extra work, but the youngsters have such a good time, it's well worthwhile. There's one problem, though, that always comes up. What to serve? Now, of course, for a beverage, I'm going to suggest Canada Dry Ginger Ale. For children love ginger ale, and it must be satisfying to mothers to know of the rigid care with which Canada Dry is made. How the choicest ingredients are checked and rechecked to doubly ensure purity and wholesome goodness. The children like Canada Dry, and it's good for them. And sometimes, for an extra special treat, serve a Canada Dry grape juice punch. It's easy to make. Just Canada Dry ginger ale and grape juice mixed half and half. Now here's Mr. Fadiman with news of next week's guest.
Thank you. Miss Marvel and Mr. Jaffe, would you please accept Canada Dry's thanks for coming down this evening and joining the party. Now next week, our reliable trio, the Adams-Kieran-Levant combination, will be on hand. Our guest of honor will be one of the most versatile experts we've ever had. He's a track shooter, a golfer, a billiard shark, but I think he may be particularly well known to you as a very great expert in the game or conspiracy or whatever you choose to call it, of bridge. His name is T. Hal Finn. Now, to our listeners, we say, please send your questions along, and if you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question, and another 10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win $15 in all. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Among the host of Canada Dry beverages, you are bound to enjoy these favorites.